Welcome to the all-new Elite Sports Debate Podcast. This is episode 1. I am Luke Colella.
And I am Alex Colella.
This episode is brought to you by Fazio Steel Yard, located right here in Washington Township, New Jersey.
We have so much fun talking sports with our friends and debating sports with you. Sports is such a big part of our lives, especially growing up in the Delaware Valley, where we're surrounded by the most passionate fans in the country. This being our first episode of many, we'll be putting out a new show every week throughout the year. We'll continue to grow, improve our podcast, bring in guests, and just have a blast doing it. I grew up in West Philly, Overbrook Park, an incredible neighborhood to grow up in. In the 70s, I grew up with the most awesome group of guys in a place we simply called the driveway. This is where my love for sports began. In the 80s, my grade school and high school buddies were also very sports-oriented. And years later, my passion for sports obviously rubbed off on you and your two brothers.
Yeah, rubbing off on us would be an understatement. I remember at 7 years old, the Phillies winning the World Series, you running out in the street banging pots and pans, sitting on your shoulders at the parade on a chilly Halloween. But hockey was actually our first love. I played this sport throughout my entire childhood, and now at 23, I just officiate it and been gladly doing that for the past 3 years. We did everything back then, from pickup basketball to wiffle ball to, of course, hockey in the street, kickball, stickball, you name it. If we were outside, we were playing sports. All right, let's dive right into things. We'll start with the most popular team in the city, the Birds, and the Saquon Barkley news.
So Howard Eskin reported on WIP that the Eagles are in fact interested in bringing in the ex-Giant Saquon Barkley. And what's really interesting about that, Luke, is Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, he likes to stock up on draft picks. And if they let Swift walk, they receive a compensatory draft pick. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Howie does here. Do you bring in another back or do you re-sign Swift?
There hasn't been much Swift talk so far this offseason in general, I feel like, but whatever the Eagles do at running back is a win-win, I believe, because like you said, no Swift, you get that extra pick, and it probably means you sign Saquon, but then if you keep Swift, then you still get that good back you had just a year ago, familiar with the system, and he's going to be cheaper.
So here's the scary part about bringing in Saquon. You know, in 2020, he had a pretty serious knee injury. He had an ACL. I think there was a meniscus, a tour. And that was a major injury he received early in the season in 2020, and he missed the rest of the season. And in my opinion, Saquon has not been the same. When he came out of Penn State, I remember watching him at Penn State. I'm a Penn State fan. I remember watching him the first year or two with the Giants. He looked like he could be one of the all-time greats. I mean, he was that good. Since that injury, I'm not so sure about that.
I think he's shown some flashes even from just a year ago. I mean, you got to remember the offensive line he's behind, the quarterback he's next to. Bringing up that ACL injury, you got to bring in the fact that he plays half a season at MetLife on the worst turf in football. And it's just known, like multiple players have said it. It's a shock that the NFL hasn't changed it yet. And it's home to two NFL teams too. I mean, there's numerous reasons why he'd want to leave. He definitely wants to stay close by. Like you said, he's from Penn State and he wants to get back at the Giants for sure. He's definitely a little sour towards them. What better way to get back at them than signing with a division rival? And I think, you know, if you have Saquon, it'll bring a little bit more of the run game with Hurts, and maybe that'll keep Saquon a little more healthier. But like I said, that turf's a big factor.
They definitely want a running back that's going to catch the ball out of the backfield, though, and Saquon can do that.
Even though they had one last year and they barely did it.
That's true.
In other football news, though, the Broncos cutting Russell Wilson, and that is the record, $85 million for a dead cap space. I mean, I just want to know, there's something. I always knew Russ was an oddball, strange cat, but he didn't even have like a terrible season last year. I mean, the Broncos were still willing like $85 million. Like they wanted to get rid of him bad for some reason.
And Denver's going to have to pay $39 million guaranteed. I mean, that's just crazy money for a big failure that you brought in from Seattle, that he was going to be your savior in Denver. And what a failure that is. I just don't think Russell Wilson is that good anymore. I really don't.
It's crazy to think there were talks of him going to Canton a few years ago when he left Seattle. And like those past two seasons, he has not looked anywhere near a Hall of Fame quarterback, going 11-19 in two seasons with Denver. Not to give the Broncos that much light, let's transition into the Phillies as we're getting closer to opening day. And we'll start off with Bryce Harper's contract. With 8 years remaining, he asked for an extension. And I'm just going to say this, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Unnecessary. I love you, Bryce, but this is not a good look. At least win a World Series first.
Yeah, I agree. I love debating this with Phillies fans. I mean, $330 million. He signed a contract. So maybe I'm old school. You signed a contract, Bryce. You have 8 years left on your contract. And you didn't win a World Series. I know you accomplished a lot. The last two postseasons were so much fun in this town. So much fun. Absolutely fantastic what he did. I'm looking at some numbers, right? 2021, a lot of people forget this. He is the fourth outfielder in Major League history with at least 100 runs, 100 walks, 40 doubles, and 35 home runs in a season. Do you know who the other three players are? Babe Ruth, Barry Bonds, and Stan Musial. That's insane company that he's with. He's a tremendous player. So I do not want a downgrade of how good of a player he is. But I'm sorry. $330 million, you have 8 years left. I mean, maybe play out a few years of the contract, half of it, then maybe say, okay, I'm underpaid.
He just looks so greedy.
It comes across as greedy. And that's just what I don't like about it.
Well, let's get into that opening day lineup. Now, I have one, and this is what it should be.
I have one that I'm going to tell you what the Phillies are going to do and what Rob Thompson's going to do.
So here's what it should be. I got Stott leading off, and then I go Turner. Harper 3, Schwarber in the cleanup, Boehm 5, Casty 6, JT 7, Marsh 8, and then end it off with Rojas at 9. I disagree with the whole, like, you got to alternate lefty righties. Like, no, just put your best players in there. If maybe you don't want three or four lefties or righties in a row and you want to split up, maybe fine, because towards the end of the game to dismantle the bullpen a little bit. But stop with this, like, Schwarber and Harper can't be next to each other. Like, no, this is what the lineup should be. You got two speed guys at the top, you can steal bases. Harper's your best hitter at the three, and Schwarber will get the most RBI opportunities he can. And then you got Boehm, who is your next best hitter after all that, right after him. I mean, this lineup is stacked. But this is how I would do it.
That's great. Sounds good. But guess what? It's not happening. Rob Thompson's going to have, don't laugh at me, he's going to have Schwarber leading off, Turner batting second, Harper batting third. Cleanup is either going to be Castellanos or Realmuto. You can interchange those two. Stott will be in the fifth hole. And then the bottom three will be Marsh, Boehm, Rojas. And that's just what he's going to do. I don't necessarily agree with it either. A lot of people out there don't think Schwarber should lead it off. People think that he clogs up the bases. He gets on base. He walks. But he clogs up the bases. We want some speed. Look how the Phillies lost to the Diamondbacks last year. Small ball. Running the bases. Speed. And the Phillies just aren't playing the game that way. They're having Schwarber lead off. He's clogging up the bases. But that's what Rob Thompson's going to do.
Schwarber hitting a leadoff home run, like, that doesn't win you games. Like, him going up 1-0 in the first at bat, like, a 1-0 lead in the first inning means absolutely nothing in baseball. He could be hitting a grand slam in that spot, not a solo shot. How many solo shots has he had? Like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the, oh, they win when Schwarber's in the first. Like, okay, no, dude, no. You haven't even, what have we given, a month, 2 months max without Schwarber in the leadoff? He plays 100 plus games in the leadoff every year. How are we even supposed to know that's a fact? He's not a leadoff hitter. I don't know what this whole, like, are we trying to be different or cool? Like, just stop, bro. Put him in the four. He hits home runs. He's Ryan Howard. He's not Bryson Stott and Trey Turner are the epitome of a leadoff hitter.
Opening day lineup, Schwarber will be leading off.
Going to be a great start to the season against the Braves.
And then don't forget you have Whit Merrifield in there too that the Phillies picked up. So very interesting because if Marsh isn't ready to go, you could put Merrifield out there.
Or if Rojas can hit a beach ball.
Absolutely. Merrifield will be in there for Rojas. So we'll see how Rojas... They're giving him a chance.
Yeah, I like it.
Yep.
He showed some flashes at the plate. He had a little small hot streak at one point. Obviously, got exposed in the playoffs. But so let's talk some hoops. We'll start with some women's. Caitlin Clark. What a phenom she has become. And it's just hard to ignore what she has accomplished and still has how high her ceiling is, if there even is one.
Amazing, isn't it? It's amazing to see. She actually is the NCAA D1 all-time leading scorer. I mean, incredible. She passed Pistol Pete Maravich. You would never think, I just never even thought it was a possibility. I never even thought I would see a woman in college basketball be the number one scorer. It's just crazy. And here's the funny part. So Pistol Pete, who did this way before your time, Luke, he did this in 1970. He played only 3 years. So Pistol Pete played 3 years. He didn't play his freshman year. And he averaged 44 points a game.
Sheesh.
Right? Caitlin Clark's average, she played all 4 years, obviously. And she's averaging 28.3 points per game.
Well, also, women's games are shorter.
They are. But I heard a crazy stat. I was reading about Pete Maravich. If he actually had a 3-point line, he would be averaging 57 points a game instead of 44 because he shot from outside, like shooting the lights out.
Times have changed. After you guys listen to this, she's also gonna have the record for most 3-pointers made in a season because she just went away from breaking Steph Curry and Darius McGee's record. So she just continues to break records and rewrite history books. Now, switching things into the NBA, we're going to do a little contender or pretender.
And all right, Luke, I'll throw some teams at you. You tell me. Contender or pretender? You ready?
Yep.
Let's start with the West, the Thunder.
The Thunder are a pretender. They're going to be great for many years to come with that youth, but they are the youngest team in the NBA. And Their rebounding is where they lack. You know, they might win a round, but that West is tough. And even though they might finish as a top 2 seed, they could easily, they might run into the Lakers or the Suns or the Mat. Like, it's a gauntlet, that West. So I got to say pretender, even though they are a great team.
How about the Lakers that you just mentioned?
The Lakers are also a pretender. And as you would know, I'm a huge LeBron fan. They're just so inconsistent and injury riddled. I mean, LeBron and AD, they're not 100%, haven't been all year really. And they're just, again, the West is too good. They're just way better teams. They'll probably get into the play-in, but we'll see if they can sneak in as the 8 seed.
Jordan's the GOAT, but we'll save that debate for another day.
Please.
How about the Pelicans?
The Pelicans, I think, are actually a contender. They're flying under the radar, to be honest, this season, and they got a great trio in McCollum and Ingram and Zion Williamson, Jonas Valanciunas eating up the boards, and I think they're like fifth right now in the West, you know, and just above them is like the Nuggets, and obviously the Thunder we talked about, and the T-Wolves they just lost Karl Anthony Towns, so the Pelicans, that can open the door for them as the second best team in the West, or third, and I think they can make a run if they stay healthy.
One more team in the West I'll give you, the Clippers.
The Clippers are also a contender. They're actually my pick to come out of the West. I think, you know, a lot of people obviously on the Nuggets, you know, which makes sense, reigning champs, Jokic. But, you know, the Clippers, they got closer last year. I think it was the first time to make it to the Western Conference Final. And I think they get over the hump this year. You know, they added James Harden at the deadline, and it hurts to say that they really helped this team out. And he's a great accomplice with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, the Claw can play some great defense as well. So they're definitely a contender in my eyes.
Let's move over to the East. I'll give you two teams. One, the Knicks.
The Knicks, I actually think, are a contender because I think they're a top three team in the East, even though they slipped a little bit. You know, they lost Brunson a couple games. But when they get Mitchell Robinson back, and they've been doing all this without Julius Randle too, I think they can easily get hot. They can win the first round. They'll probably get home field advantage. And Jalen Brunson's just a real big difference maker. Obviously, you got the Celtics, who are the best team in the league. So, but the Knicks can easily be in that Eastern Conference final and give them a run for their money.
How about our Philadelphia 76ers?
And our Philadelphia 76ers are definitely contenders. Not to be biased, but obviously they're not where we want to be right now. But, you know, we lost the best player in the league in Joel Embiid. Tyrese Maxey has a concussion now, missed the last couple games. But this is something we're seeing out of a Sixers team we haven't had yet, and that's having Embiid later rather than now. And I think he'll be ready to go. He'll be healthy. He might even be able to play a couple games before the playoffs start. And the fact that they got rid of Harden really helped them. It made Maxey like blossom. And Nick Nurse is really something the Sixers haven't really had. And Doc Rivers, Brett Brown, they were not it. Nick Nurse is a game changer. He knows how to rotate the players. He knows who to play, when to play them. And he's not scared to play them, to play the young guys. Doc Rivers didn't do that. And Doc Rivers chokes and chokes leads. He chokes series. So, yeah, Sixers can definitely make a run with Embiid down the line. Yeah, that'll cover basketball. Let's end it off on the ice.
Yeah, not too many people even care about hockey these days, but
yeah, hopefully you guys are still sticking around.
If you are following hockey, you can't ignore what Nathan MacKinnon is doing of the Colorado Avalanche. He is on fire. He has 40 goals, 109 points, and he still has 18 games left. And then there's Austin Matthews of Toronto. Wow, he's got 54 goals with 19 games left. I mean, these guys are tearing it up.
Yeah, it's like they score a game, but let alone they're getting multiple points a game. Just point machines. Like, they just create scoring chances. Austin Matthews is crazy. He's going to get 65 goals, I'm sure. I just hope the Leafs can make a run, finally.
I hate Toronto. All right, let's talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. So, they broke a record for most penalty shot goals scored in a season. 5. That's crazy. And this team is fun to watch. Luke, are the Flyers going to make the playoffs?
Yes, absolutely. And if you asked me this in the beginning of the season, I would have said you're crazy. But, I mean, what, with 18, 19 games left, I mean, they've been in a playoff spot pretty much all year, besides maybe the first month. And they're ahead of, they got a couple, like, teams to work with, because the Islanders are in their division. If they pass them, they'll move into the third spot. But then you look at the Atlantic, and there's two Atlantic teams in the wild card, and the Flyers are ahead of both of those right now. So as long as they stay afloat, there's four teams, I think, fighting for two spots, and they can easily, or maybe even three, I think it's three. And, you know, they got more than enough chance to be one of those teams.
8 out of the next 9 games are tough.
How many times have we said this, though?
They play at Tampa. They got the Sharks in there. That'll be a dub, right? They play Toronto at home, at Boston, Toronto at home again, at Carolina, Boston and Florida at home, at the Rangers. That is a tough stretch. This is going to be make it or break it.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, don't we say this kind of every game? I mean, just looking back at that Panthers game, they beat them twice, and they were huge underdogs in both of those. I mean, it's like they're just achieving every time. They're not scared, and they're not scared of those bigger teams. Like, they can play with anyone. They've proven it. So, you know, they might be really tough to beat in 4 times in a 7-game series, especially if Sam Ersson keeps playing the way he is. Looking at that penalty kill, I mean, how that is just scary. Like, when you have a penalty kill that scores more than your power play, I mean, if you're on the penalty kill, like, you don't even feel bad if you're the Flyers. Like, it's, you have good a chance as any of scoring. The other team should be nervous, if anything. Scoring machines on that penalty kill. Konechny, it's wild. Him, Forster, Frost, they really get after the puck. Yeah, let's end it off with some contender or pretender in the NHL.
All right, let's do it. I'll throw some teams at you. Let's start off with the Red Wings. Contender or pretender?
The Red Wings are a pretender. I wouldn't be surprised if they slipped out of that wild card spot I was just talking about, to be honest. They took a great leap than last year, but I still think they're developing, and let's be honest, they're probably a first round exit.
How about the New York Islanders?
The Islanders are also a pretender. They're on the outside looking in right now. And they are playing their best hockey. You know, they got Sorokin, who's, you can't count him out, but they can't hold leads. They don't score enough. So, nah, I don't think they'll make it, and I think they're a pretender.
The defending champs, Vegas.
Vegas has been a weird team this year. They haven't really lived up to their standard. But I think they have yet to play their best hockey. They haven't been healthy, so I think when they're fully healthy, obviously, you know, Jack Eichel hurts, but they're still in a great spot to get at least one round at home in the playoffs. They can definitely make a run. You know, the West is pretty deep, but it's anyone's game, really, in the NHL.
Seattle Kraken.
I think they're a contender, actually. You know, they haven't had the start they wanted to, and now, you know, time's kind of running out on them, but they're finally winning games, and, you know, they're right on the outside looking in. So I think if they continue to play the way they are, they're getting good goaltending. I think they're going to sneak in, and they could be definitely dangerous to play.
How about Florida? Florida made it to the finals last year. They look like one of the best teams in the NHL right now. How about the Florida Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely a contender. They're probably, you can argue, they're the best team in the league. The question is, yeah, are they going to make it back to the Cup final? Because when they did last year, they barely got into the playoffs. So now they have expectations. They're probably going to be a one seed. And, you know, but Sergei Bobrovsky is unreal. So when you have him, you can win any game. And yeah, they're definitely a contender. But that East, you know, the NHL is just so tough.
How about our Philadelphia Flyers?
This is tough, but I got to say the Flyers are pretenders. You know, they keep proving me wrong. So maybe they will here, but I just think there's other teams that are better and more experienced. You know, Sam Harrison, we haven't seen him yet in a playoff game. So who knows how he reacts to that. And it's tough to win with a really poor power play as good as their penalty kill is. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, their ceiling is maybe winning a playoff round, which is fine by me. But if I had to pick, I would say pretender. That will wrap it up for this pilot episode. Follow me on Twitter at LUCO_94.
And you can hit me up on Facebook at Alex Colella.
We'd like to thank Fazio Steel, and we'd like to thank you for listening. We will be back next week for another episode of the all-new Elite Sports Debate Podcast with Luke and Alex Colella. We'll discuss March Madness, NFL free agency, and more. Goodbye, everyone.